from the President of the United States to the President of your local school board. We talk a lot about the importance of a good and healthy preschool experience for our children. As parents, we want our children to have every possible advantage to grow and develop into full, healthy, happy, social, economically stable adults. This is Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson. Today, we address the benefits of early childhood programs for your children. Perhaps your grandchild will view it from a lens that looks at the importance of academic, emotional, and social development. We'll talk about the myriad of options, philosophies, and academic disciplines available to parents while recognizing the challenges many parents face as they prioritize the health and safety of their little ones. And we'll transform some cold, hard statistics into a human face. And impediments to a child's access to good early education programs are on the table. Jim Cocomo is here. He's the Director of Early Learning and Head Start at the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council, Mid-America Regional Council. Good to have you here, Jim.
Well, it's good to be here, Bill. Thank you.
Yeah. And also joining us is Polly Prendergast. She's the Director of the Berkeley Child and Family Development Center at UMKC. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And Bridgen Gardner is Director of Clinical Services at Operation Breakthrough. Hi.
Good morning.
Thanks all for coming in today. Jim, tell me, in your professional opinion, just how important is a good early childhood experience?
Well, it's critically important. And the research that's come out over the last 15 or 20 years has really underscored the importance of it. And there's lots and lots of research, Bill. So it makes a difference. And having children in high-quality programs so that they're ready to succeed at school when they knock on the kindergarten door is critically important.
So it's about the child's well-being and making a whole child, but also ultimately there are benefits to society.
Oh, there's no question about it, Bill. If you have a child entering school ready to succeed, the child does better and does better so that by the end of third grade, the child is reading at grade level or appropriate and so on, all the way through the school career. And I think what early learning really gives children is internal or intrinsic motivation. And by that, I mean children learn how to play. They learn how to develop passion for learning. And they really learn about their purpose to learn and be a healthy, strong human being.
We have Head Start. We have public school early childhood programs. We have for-profits, nonprofits, everything in between. Are we doing a pretty good job in the metropolitan area with our children?
Oh, I think so. One of the issues that we have at the Mid-America Regional Council is to help particularly urban core programs improve the quality of their programs and improve access for parents. It is early learning is important for every child, but it's really critical for children from low-income environments.
Polly, you're involved in Operation Breakthrough, and you're exactly what Jim is describing. So talk about it a little bit.
Well, I'm actually with UMKC, the Berkeley Child and Family Development Center.
Excuse me, I meant Bridgen. My apologies.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we can't emphasize the importance of early childhood education and early childhood learning. 90% of the brain is developed by the time the child is three. It's almost the size of an adult brain. And the neural pathways that are being laid down at that time are critical to a child's learning and social, emotional, and cognitive growth. And providing quality care, providing quality opportunities for our children is imperative.
And you deal with a lot of at-risk children. You have a lot of challenges, and sometimes just getting the children fed is priority one,
right.
let alone the educational
right.
component.
Basic needs. The safety and the – if you're hungry, you're not going to be able to learn. If you're tired because you've been couch surfing and don't have a place to sleep at night, you're going to be not in the best place to learn. So we try and meet those needs at a very basic level.
How many children do you have in your program?
In our preschool program, we have 312.
Uh-huh.
And we serve over 400 children a day because we have a before and after school program as well.
Would you describe them all as at risk?
I would say probably 98% of our children would be considered in a high-risk category.
And give us a snapshot of the parents that use Operation Breakthrough.
Sure. The majority of our folks are single moms. and they are African-American moms that have between 1 to 2 children making an income of $15,000 or less. 50% of our moms are employed. Some of them attend school, like about 20% attend school. So they are working. They are productive members of society. And then there are people that can't get employed and that have other things getting in the way of seeking employment, mental health and those types of issues.
Yeah. And I was reading somewhere where some of these kids have been exposed to at least been around people that are engaged in using drugs and other bad behaviors. And the kids, at least at some level, have been abused.
Right.
It's hard for me to say that word. Yeah.
It is. I'm the director of clinical and social services. So we see a snapshot of our kids. We see about 126 kids. And out of those 126 kids, 80% of our kids under the age of 4 that are in clinical therapy services have had more than 4 traumatic events happen. Mm-hmm. And trauma includes seeing a loved one get hurt or beaten up, drug use in front of you, a loved one going to jail, some really significant events in a child's life that middle-class kids don't have to experience ever, mm-hmm. Alone before the age of 4.
There's a great deal of research being done, and this issue that you and Bridget are talking about is called toxic stress.
Right.
And the more toxic stress that children have, the more difficulty they have in dealing with their environment. And one of the things that we have in Head Start, we have a large number of children, as Bryn said, who have emotional and behavioral problems at 3 years of age. So we've been working with community mental health providers to support children and families. And it is really a serious problem, a problem which most of our citizens don't realize exists.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So is toxic – I've heard the expression ambient stress. Is that the same thing as toxic stress? Are we talking the same language?
It is. It's, okay. It's environmental stress. Uh-huh. Ambient is
– and it's constant.
Right.
Yeah. It is for some children very constant.
Yeah. When you think about the normal human being would be walking out and if we saw a bus, we're going to jump back. Our body and our brains are flooded with a hormone called cortisol. And it's this quick reaction and we jump back and we're safe. Mm-hmm. Our kids live in chronic stress, chronic high arousal states where this cortisol is flooding their brains at all time. And so they're either in hyper or hypo arousal where they're either going to be engaged in aggressive behaviors or kind of dissociating from the situation to maintain and cope.
So how do you prepare them for a day at Operation Breakthrough, knowing that that's right. a given when they walk in the door?
Well, we don't really have our hands around what happens before they get to our doors, but we have quality staff that are there for the purpose of being with our children and walking with the families and walking with the children in this poverty walk and the walk towards education. Mm-hmm. So we have staff who are there that care. And that's primary. The relationship and the connection that they have with their teacher is primary to even being able to have the day set up to be successful.
Polly, you were nodding your head.
Well, I was just thinking when you hear these stories, so many times we forget that if we can't get children to basic stages of play, and you have to get through the emotional issues. You can spot it in a classroom, and you can spot it in programs throughout the city where a child is bouncing through a classroom, area mm-hmm. to area, person to person, and they're not really fully engaging with another peer in play. And sometimes we might just think, "Oh, look, that's sad. They don't have any friends," or other people might react. They're just not following the program. They're not following the rules. But in fact, there's something much more serious happening. And that's what I think we forget a lot about, particularly when we're looking at children at Operation Breakthrough. We've experienced children like that in our program, or all the Head Start programs, is if we can't get children built into a basic community of learners, and that's what it is. It's mm-hmm. a very serious community of learners who can build peer relationships and make sense of their world through their play, the impact that's going to have on us 5, 10, 15, 20 mm-hmm. years down the road is enormous. Mm-hmm. So if we're business people, it only makes sense to invest in very young children, and you have to have highly trained staff. One of the passionate things we talk about at Berkeley is if you don't internalize that your position is on the level of a physician and in the way that you deal with family issues, you're like a lawyer and accountable to those standards. I mean, we have our own code of ethics. You're not really realizing the impact that you potentially have on children, your community, and the entire society. That's how critical it is. And we miss that a lot. And we sometimes, I think, pigeonhole and say, well, these children, which is true, are the highest risk. And, well, we won't worry about this group of children. Or when, in fact, there should be a standard where we say, I worry about all children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, Bill, it's interesting to me as I sit and listen to Polly and Bridget talk about the needs of our children. We know what we know. And Nancy and I have two boys, and they grew up in a upper middle class environment and did very well. So that's what we know. Mm-hmm. But when you spend time at a place like Operation Breakthrough or you visit a Head Start center, we see children that are really struggling, and it takes a lot to work with them and to deal with them and to support the families. And, oh, by the way, you have to be all those things that Polly said, a physician, a social worker, mm-hmm. in one person, and we'll pay you $20,000 a year.
Right.
So the issue of having quality programs and having the teachers, you know, the research projects that have gone over the years that demonstrate the efficacy of early learning were projects where they had master-level teachers, master's degrees. They had social workers and clinical social worker like Bridgen. They had psychologists. They had, because of the need of some of our children and families, that's the kind of program that we believe all children need.
Yeah, I was noting, I don't know where I saw this, but we're ranked among industrial nations something like 31st in the percentage or the amount of money we apply to early childhood programs.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Missouri's even worse. Missouri's mm-hmm. about, well, I'm thinking about subsidies towards families. I think we rank 49. We're maybe one state better than Mississippi.
Yeah.
So that's an issue.
Jim, I know you work on the Missouri side, but would you say the same applies to Kansas?
Well, I think it applies to all the states.
Okay.
Things in Kansas are a little better. There's a little more money. The governor had $51 million in his budget for the Children's Trust Fund. So things are moving along a little better. But the issue is that we all need to do a much better job. You know, the conversation about early learning has shifted in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be, well, mothers should be home with their kids. Why are they working?
Mm-hmm.
Or it doesn't matter. That's shifted now. Everybody understands the importance of early learning. The question now is, okay, how do we pay for it?
Right.
Which is a different question.
Yes, exactly. Kansas City, what do you look for when you're searching for child care and early education for your child? Join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Or post your comments to Facebook. And we're live tweeting the show as I speak. Our guest today, Jim Cocomo, Director of Early Learning and Head Start at Mid-America Regional Council. Polly Prendergast is here. She's the director of the Berkeley Child and Family Development Center at UMKC. Bridgen Gardner is here, and she's director of clinical services at Operation Breakthrough. And David is joining us from Overland Park. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I was just calling about what you were saying about, I think you called it toxic trauma.
Yes.
My daughter, I've raised her as a single parent for 90% of her life. Her mother was extremely schizophrenic, and I did not know that when we first got together. When she was three, her mother had a breakdown and stole her and disappeared for over a year. When she got back, when we got her back, she had reverted back to a pre-verbal state where she would just sit in a corner and rock.
Hmm.
And I'm here to tell you she just turned 18. She has been diagnosed with juvenile onset schizophrenia since she was five. And winner.
Okay.
David, you know, I have to say your daughter's very lucky to have you, and thank you for all your hard work, because I know it's very, very difficult. So you're helping her. You're helping to provide the things that she needs. And I think your comment to the listening audience about if you get engaged early, there are things you can do is really helpful. So thank you for what you've done for your daughter, and thank you for sharing this.
Absolutely. And just recognizing that there is mental health in children. Just because they can't talk, because they can't verbalize what's happening, it's happening to them. It's happening mm-hmm. to their bodies. It's happening. It's happening. So mm-hmm. acknowledging that and getting treatment earlier, the earlier the better, absolutely.
Polly, you're the director of the UMKC Child Care Center. You have a lot of advantages perhaps that Operation Breakthrough doesn't have. You've got infrastructure support from UMKC.
We do.
Yeah.
And being part of an academic unit, the School of Education, we have resources that are available to us. But I think it's important. I'm going to take this opportunity.
Yeah.
We offer many classes in the evenings at Berkeley through our continuing education department. And all of our resources that are available to us, we want to make available throughout the entire community, and particularly in the urban core area. One of the things we're really grateful for is the level of teachers that we do receive. Most of them are students at the mm-hmm. School of Education, and they're demonstration teachers, and they are coaching other student teachers how to go out and to work in other schools.
Do you see, of course you see some at-risk behaviors, maybe not to the same extent Bridgen sees at Operation Breakthrough, but...
I think that's an important piece to bring out. And this is true of a lot of child care centers, particularly that would be not-for-profit or not-for-profit. So we have a range of typically developing children, children who maybe have come out of foster care and have severe attachment disorders, mm-hmm. Some children from what you would consider typically developing families, but maybe there has been alcoholism in the family or unfortunate separations that can cause quite a bit of trauma on a child, and you will see it in a child care center. And I'm really talking in general, too, about mm-hmm. Centers. And you can in my career over 20 years, have even dealt with neglectful situations. So I think sometimes we think that economics protects you, when in fact the issues that we're talking about today know no boundaries.
Okay.
You just have more resources. Sometimes you have more resources to get more help, if that makes
sense. Right.
It doesn't discriminate.
It doesn't discriminate. That's right.
My kids are grown now, but I remember when they went to a Montessori school, and it was a great school. They had a wonderful experience, but they spent a lot of time there. Mm-hmm. And I know as a parent, I dealt with a lot of guilt. Yeah. It was hard for me to leave my children there every day.
10 to 12 hours they're spending with a different caregiver that's not their primary, that's not their mom or their dad or their grandparents.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of responsibility on the educator.
Yeah.
You know the guilt is something I think that parents deal with.
Yeah.
I don't know very many women who wouldn't rather be able to be home with their children. The economics, our society, you can't do it. And so what we really advise parents is to make sure that the early learning program that you select for your child is a good fit. Mm-hmm. It's a good fit for you. It's a good fit for your child. They have appropriate teachers and supplies and so on. That helps assuage, I think, the guilt that we have as parents. Our two boys went to a Montessori school, and you know, we dealt with that, as does, I think, most of our parents. But the good news is, they were in a good, strong program, getting the kind of support they needed. And that's the thing I think that parents need to focus on.
Well, yeah, what kind of resources are out there? Where, if I'm a young parent looking for an early childhood program, where do I start?
You know, I would, and Jim will probably have even some better options, but I would say with the Family Conservancy, they're a resource and referral agency here located in Kansas City, Kansas. And they have many specialists. They have a specialist for family child care, for child care centers. You can call them and give them your zip code, I believe. Is that right, mm-hmm. Jim?
Yes.
And they will tell you, here are accredited centers. It used to be you could also find out for Quality Rating System, which was a marvelous program that helped programs monitor quality every 18 months. And unfortunately, Missouri outlawed that practice for quality mm-hmm. setting quality mm-hmm. standards, which was devastating a year ago. But so if you call the Family Conservancy, and I don't have their phone number right here, they would be able to give you a lot of resources on – they have pamphlets on choosing quality okay. child care, and they're non-biased. They're just a resource for the whole community.
Yeah, yes. the program is called Child Care Aware, and I suspect if parents have access to Google, you can Google Child Care Aware in Missouri, and it'll give you the number. Call them. They also have lots of literature that would help parents think through what are the things I'm interested in for my child. And, of course, they will give you a list of centers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
But I also think, unfortunately, we're talking about people who do have choice and have resources and ways to get to the center of their choice, where a lot of our families are going to have to take – our families at Operation Breakthrough are going right. to have to take two or three buses with two or three children mm-hmm. to get their kids to school, to daycare. And, you know,
and then they have to turn around and go to work.
And then they have to turn around and go to work, yeah.
And it's the same for many of our parents in Head Start. But for me, it's important that we support the parents in their decision-making and help them all we can in their decision-making process, because it's hard.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
hard.
There's two websites, too, that are more nationally, but they have incredible mm-hmm. resources. One would be 0to3.org. That has some of the best information, both for teachers and for families, on children developing 0 to 3 years old. They even have parent blogs, and the resources are amazing. The other would be, and it is for our profession, April is Month of the Young Child. The National Association for the Education of Young Children.org has lots of information for what does quality child care look like.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things you should be looking for when you're thinking about infant and toddler care? And we forget that care is the basis. You have to have people who are caring for and have empathy for the children that are in their care. That's mm-hmm. the, and we've all said that today, because without that, nothing else happens.
But we also talked about the fact that the wages aren't what they really should mm-hmm. be for the
no.
people that are really, you know, taking care of our children.
They're raising
a majority
our future.
Of the time.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. Jim, you know, there are a lot of programs that have been in place. I'm thinking of one in Ypsilanti, Michigan, and there's a lot of data, a lot of research available to us to kind of inform us and allow us to take advantage of improving the lot for our children in Kansas City. Talk to that point a little bit.
That's true, Bill. The HiSCOPE, it's also called the HiSCOPE Research, Ypsilanti, mm-hmm. Michigan, the Perry Preschool Project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the 60s, they started, and they served low-income families and had a very well-staffed center for children and families, made home visits and so on. We now have all of the data, 50 years of data on those children.
Mm-hmm.
And the children who went through the program are married and stay married, are employed, have fewer engagements with the law, have steady employment. Many have gone to college. And this is compared to kids who look just like them but weren't in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of others nationally that are really the premier programs that lead us to know what quality is. And so we're really – there's just an abundance of research. I read an article yesterday from the New York Times about wrong investments in school.
Mm-hmm.
How many years have we been trying to improve K-12 education?
Right.
In 1982, the president came out with a report, and we started then. And still, in urban core, we have lots of children that don't graduate from high school. So it's tough, and this report says invest in early learning.
Let me throw a quote at you. Study after study shows that the earlier a child begins learning, the better he or she does down the road. President Obama.
Absolutely. And I think what Bridgen said about the brain development, we know now that the first 3 to 5 years are critical, and we know now that research done by James Heckman, the Nobel laureate,
yes.
Says that lots of kids start school thousands of vocabulary words behind, thousands, and they never catch up.
Yeah.
So the time to get them, as the president said and as many other people have said, is in those first 3 to 5 years.
Jim, isn't it for every $7 we invest in early childhood, we recoup 25? Or is it that we can either spend $7 a child now or spend $25 an adult when they hit 18?
You got the idea of the data correct. And you know, for every dollar spent, you save $7 or $13 down the road. And people argue whether it's $7 or $8 or maybe it's $6 or maybe it's $5. You know, I don't know. Well, the point is, it's a savings. But more importantly than the money is the difference it makes for our children.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what this is about. Does it save money? Yeah. And, you know, one time somebody said to me, they said, Jim, you know the money you saved? Go spend it on, well, I don't really have the money. It's just money that I'm not spending later on helping kids get better.
Uh-huh.
So it's about our children. And whether you save $7 or $12 or $18, important, but most importantly is what we can do for our children and their families.
And I don't want to get stuck here on the money part, but you referenced Mr. Jim Heckman.
Yes.
And in a New York Times article, he's talking about public spending on higher education being 3 times as large as what we spend on preschool.
Right.
So maybe we talk a good game.
Well, the problem is that everybody sees early learning from their mind's eye.
Yeah.
So I had a story one time. I met with a highfalutin guy from Indiana, and he said Head Start doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I don't agree with you, but let me tell you why. And essentially, this was the difference. He was a lawyer and his wife were lawyers. They spent $12,000 a year for early learning. In Head Start, we spend $6,400. So you know, Bill, if it's not the same, there's a reason. There's lots less money spent. So what you have in your mind's eye is what you call early learning. But early learning is a whole wide array of very bad programs to very good programs,
right,
with most of them being mediocre.
Yeah. Are most programs, Bridgen, inclusive? If I have a child with either a physical or a learning disability, is he or she going to have the same opportunities as other children? And Polly, you can answer this too.
I think it becomes more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to say there is a marvelous program right down the street, the Therapeutic Learning Center. It's one of our oldest preschools. It was, I believe, the first integrated preschool as well in the city that their mission is to serve children that you're in a way addressing right now, children with some might have feeding tubes, cerebral palsy, autism, and so forth. And I do think that it is more difficult for an average program to meet a lot of the needs because they don't have that type of staffing. They're meeting state ratios in order to keep a budget going, which in a preschool classroom is going to be 1 to 10. I guess that's a NAICS accreditation, but best practices. And when you have non-typically developing children with really more severe issues, you need higher level of a teacher-child ratio. So I do think it makes it more difficult.
Bill?
Yes.
Head Start requires that 10% of our children be children with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So 10% of our children are, and I think Polly's right, we have to have some additional help with some of the children. We need more therapy. But it's a requirement for Head Start, and we manage it just fine.
And Bridgen, you're a Head Start facility, so obviously you meet that 10% requirement.
Right. We do strive to be at that number. It is hard, though, to have the personnel that are trained to do feeding tubes, and not everyone is fortunate. Operation Breakthrough has Children's Mercy on site, and that's fortunate for us, but not all centers, when you said, are all equipped, and that's just not feasible.
Mm-hmm. That's Bridgen Gardner. She's the Director of Clinical Services at Operation Breakthrough. Also in the studio, Polly Prendergast, Director of the Berkeley Child and Family Development Center at UMKC. Jim Cocomo is here. He's the Director of Early Learning and Head Start at the Mid-America Regional Council. I don't know why I want to say Mid-Atlantic every time, Jim, but I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Let's go to the phone lines in a moment, 235-2888. We'd like you to weigh in on this. What do you look for when you're searching for child care and early education for your child? What have your experiences been, good and bad? And Bridgen, I want to go to you now because we've kind of been talking about some grim realities here, but obviously, you have to have some incredible success stories, too. And could we maybe highlight one or two?
Sure. I think success for each one of our families looks really different. Success might be getting your kid to school on time so they can get breakfast. Success might be your kid comes in nonverbal, and by the time they're done with their first year, you know, they have X number more words in their vocabulary. They're playing parallel with peers. It just looks different for each individual child, and especially for each individual family. Their circumstances are so varied.
Yeah, it's amazing. It'll even today can still bring tears to my eyes because a lot of times we get caught up in theory and we talk about numbers and facts, and then when it shows itself to you right there, you think, oh my gosh, why didn't we videotape this? But when you see a child who, we talked about this at the beginning, is, and we have them in our program, who are bouncing from area to area, and all of a sudden, a week later or 2 weeks later, you really start to notice they're building a peer relationship. And then a month later, you have a parent in your, I get a little choked up, you know, in your office saying, oh my gosh, my child has the first friend that they've ever had. Thank you so much. And it's like, well, we thank the children because children really sometimes learn in spite of us. They know that we need to play together and we need to make friends. But when you really see it happening, it's magical.
Uh-huh. You know, Bill, we provide a lot of family support in Head Start. And I'll tell you one quick story. We had a mom who was a Head Start child herself. Mm-hmm. She had a child in Head Start. And working with us and her tenacity, she went to college. She got a Fulbright scholarship to study postgraduate. And how that impacted on her family, on her self-image, on her children's self-image, remarkable, just remarkable.
Good story.
Yeah.
Hey, do you have any indication what percentage of our children are in a quality program, the birth to pre-K kids?
Well, the catch you said is in a quality program.
Right. Yes.
There are lots of kids in early learning programs.
Yeah.
I will tell you.
A high percentage in early learning programs.
Yeah.
But I said quality.
Yeah, I know. And that brings that percentage down a little bit. Lots of kids in early learning.
Uh-huh.
Not all the programs are of high quality. I will tell you that for Head Start, for example, we serve 3,000 children. That's 18% of the eligible children in Clay, Platt, and Jackson counties, our three service areas. So we're not even scratching the surface of getting these kids service.
Let's go back to the phone lines, and Eric is joining us from Kansas City, Missouri.
Good morning.
Good morning. Do you have a question or a comment for us, sir?
Just wanted to thank your speakers this morning for their work in this area. In the Kansas City Public Schools, we know that so many of our scholars show up 1 and 2 years behind in the first grade. If we don't get serious about early learning in the city, it's going to be very hard to make sure those young people get what they need. Mm-hmm.
Eric, and I want to thank you, but I want to point out for the listening audience how much progress the Kansas City, Missouri School District has made. The district serves 726 of my Head Start children and is doing a remarkable job. They're moving forward. They still have some work to do, but they're moving forward, and we are seeing such wonderful outcomes for children. So the district's really working hard, Eric, and I hope you understand that.
Jim, I do indeed. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Leslie's on the line from Leawood. You're on the air, Leslie.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
My comment's very similar. I wanted to point out that it was actually Missouri, before the creation of the National Association for Early Childhood Education, it was Missouri who had an association like that. And Yes, they still do, absolutely. But I'm just saying, we preceded in the Show Me State, we preceded what is now a national organization. And the importance of that isn't lost on many people. Jim's career is evidence of that, and both of you as well. So I just wanted to point out that it was through that knowledge, as I was looking around many years ago now for my own children, that helped me become a better parent, and that, you know, led me ultimately to volunteer at Operation Breakthrough over the years and so on. And I think that Missouri really needs to be, you know, commended for putting out that effort. And now it's really a process of educating a whole new set of people to the very points you've been making this morning. So thank you for your efforts.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Rebecca. And Rebecca wants to shift gears here a little bit and talk about what higher education is doing in training professionals to work in the field. Hi.
Hi. Yes, my daughter is about to graduate from KU with a degree in early childhood development. Mm-hmm. And although when she, you know, first talked to me about it, I was like, oh, my God, you'll never make more than minimum wage. But
a wise mom.
My dad said the same thing.
Yeah. It's all about passion.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And I'm very proud of her. But not putting the economics aside, do you have any recommendations for areas that would be rewarding and where there's maybe growth or that type of thing?
You know, Rebecca, it's a great question, and I appreciate your calling and asking. You know, your daughter has passion and purpose, and that's what we need to succeed. And many of the local school districts have early learning programs, and there's room for advancement, and the pay is not so bad. There are programs like Berkeley and Operation Breakthrough and many of the Head Start centers. So your daughter has a real opportunity to apply to many, many places. I think the question is, what would she like to do? What kind of environment would she like to work in? Does she want to work with all low-income children and families? Operation Breakthrough is a no-brainer. That's where she needs to go. Berkeley offers a wide array. Head Start does, but school districts do as well.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
Are schools meeting the mark? Are they, you know, we have a number of, you know, higher education institutions in the region, at least a couple with early childhood programs.
It's a good question, Bill, and the answer.
And I say this because, and I'm not going to name the school, but my daughter pursued early childhood and had a deflating experience. It was horrible.
Yeah, well, I'm glad she learned quickly. The point is the schools are doing a good job. We don't have enough teachers. One of the things that worries me the most is, what would we do if the president is successful and we have universal pre-K for all 3 and 4 year olds? We don't have the teachers.
Yeah. Explain universal pre-K.
Universal pre-K is that it would be open to any 3 and 4 year old. There wouldn't be an income regulation. There wouldn't be a poverty regulation. If you're 3, you could go.
Yeah.
And so the president's talking about that, as we are in Missouri and other states.
And some states do have universal
New Jersey
coverage.
has one that was ordered by the court many years ago. And I just read a research project that says that of the kids who went to, it's called the Abbott program, of the kids who went to the Abbott early learning program, all poor kids, they have kids now through the 5th grade, and their rate of retention is significantly lower than kids like them who didn't have the program.
Yeah.
So think of the money that school districts are saving by not having children repeat grades.
Yeah, yeah. Polly, how would that change things at Berkeley? Would it, the universal coverage?
Well, I think what I would want to stay focused on is not thinking how would it change things for us.
Uh-huh.
I think we need to stick to how would that change things for our community,
mm-hmm.
and what is the most supportive environment for families in your community. Lots of families would would choose to use that, and I think it would be wonderful for people to have options because quality childcare is expensive. Sometimes we don't want to talk about that, but it is expensive. And what I'm about, and I think what most professionals in our field would say is we're about what's best for children and families.
Bridgen, same question essentially. Would it change life at Operation Breakthrough?
It would impact life, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to one of your questions about early education and our teachers coming in prepared, I think there are great programs out there. But I also think the developmental needs of our children are increasing. There are so many undiagnosed things that are happening that we're sending teachers in to expect normal development, and that's just not typical anymore.
Right. Yeah.
We have a lot of undiagnosed trauma and different things that impede learning and the experience with behaviors in the classroom.
You know, and as a parent, you know, I might be forking out, that's maybe the wrong word to use. I might be paying
$1,000.
I'm investing $1,000 a month. Is that a reasonable amount to throw out there for one of my children?
Well, are you talking about for childcare?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That is very middle of the road for infant toddler care. And you're going to go to about $700 for young preschoolers and about $680 for 3 to 5 year olds for full. I'm talking about full day care.
So,
and that's average.
You know, my will is to pay them as much as they deserve, and they deserve as much as a lawyer or a doctor, I feel. But the reality is, I can't pay much more than that. So, what a dilemma we face.
Right.
Let me, you talked about people who benefit from this.
Yes.
I'll give you a statistics from the Ford Motor Company. Someone there in HR told me that 60% of the people who apply for jobs at the Ford Motor Company don't pass the reading and math portion of the application. 80% of the people who register at Penn Valley Community College have to take a remedial course.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, it's not just you as a dad who's investing in your kid. You're investing in what happens to our community and our employers and the future.
See, there comes the guilt again, Jim.
I know, I know, and I meant to do that, Bill.
It's nice to have you here this morning.
Okay, bye.
Yeah. Polly, before we wrap up, if you had a magic wand, what would you do to help children get the services that they need in pre-K?
If I had a magic wand, I would want to see a complete infrastructure of systems created within a community where all children had access to quality programming and that early childhood teachers could at least make a living wage. I mean, if I really had a wand, that's what I'd want to see happen.
Bridgen, quickly.
And I would second that, increasing the quality of care that we're able to provide, especially to our families that are in real need of good services. Yeah.
Public funding for quality early learning, like we've funded our public school districts.
That's Jim Cocomo. He's Director of Early Learning and Head Start at the Mid-America Regional Council. We also heard from Bridgen Gardner this hour. She's Director of Clinical Services at Operation Breakthrough. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And Polly Prendergast, Director of the Berkeley Child and Family Development Center at UMKC. Thank you very much, all three of you, for being here.
Thank you.
When we return, we'll be talking about some shocking excitement that's taking place in Wichita, Kansas, of all places. It's Central Standard on KCUR.